All right, listeners, welcome back to Matt Goes to the Movies, and coming very, very soon, a series that has been around since 1984. It's been around longer than I have been alive. I was literally just born, pretty much, basically, when this series started. Ghostbusters. Released originally June 8th, 1984, and a whole new generation of people know about Ghostbusters, I think, thanks to the very successful and tip a little bit of hand, I think pretty good Ghostbusters Afterlife. But with the new movie Ghostbusters Frozen Empire coming out by the end of this month, what better time than to talk about Ghostbusters? In all forms, every Ghostbusters movie that's been released, we will be reviewing, obviously starting with the original. And, you know, sometimes they say you can't beat an original. And rewatching this movie, man, it is amazing how some movies hold up over time and some movies don't, whether good or bad, whether you're like, wow, it doesn't look as good as I remember, or boy, it's not as good as I remember, but it's actually bad, but it's laughable, so I still enjoy it. Or, yeah, it's not good, but I don't care. I still like it. This is one of those movies that I think stands the test of time. Like, even, I feel 40 years from now, a new generation could somehow, like, you know, retro and vintage could watch this movie and go, oh, yeah, this is good. I feel like Ghostbusters is one of those rare movies that will stand the test of time as always being a good movie, Rob.
There is no Rob, only Zool.
Case in point.
Yes. So this movie came out just before my second birthday. And so this has really been a property that's been around my entire life, basically, that I've been aware of. I definitely had a ton of the Ghostbusters toys and action figures, and we had Ecto-1 in my house. We had the Firehouse playset, my brother and I. We watched the real Ghostbusters cartoon. Like, we were really into this franchise. You know, we drank Ecto-Cooler. Like, this is, we were into this franchise.
Who didn't want a proton pack?
Weird people. Yeah.
Right.
I hadn't seen this in a very long time. So it was, you know, you had suggested this series and I went, well, of course, yes, naturally, of course we do this. And the new film coming out, I'm very excited about, because Afterlife was a very good movie. You know, again, not tipping my hand too much for when we get to it, but God, there's just, you know, you were right. There are some things that just really hold up. And there are so many things about this that still do. I will say there's one thing that doesn't, but you know, this movie still has better visual effects than half of the last two phases of the MCU. And this came out 40 years ago. I mean, just, you know, maybe our expectations are lower, but you know, the campiness is there. The fun is there. The humor is there. There's horror elements that work and are effective. You know, there's so many things about this that it was just, I know maybe some of this is nostalgia. And so I did something, and you know, my son sat next to me when we were watching this. He does a lot of my watch assignments together with me. And I was kind of thinking to myself, like, all right, so do I just like this because of the nostalgia factor? Like, does this still play to a modern audience, to somebody who didn't grow up with it and has no real attachment to it the way that I do? And we finished and I said, hey, bud, you know, what'd you think? He's like, oh, I loved it. It's Ghostbusters, of course. So it's evergreen. This movie will still be something that people can enjoy for generations to come.
Yeah, and again, I think it is really, to me, part of it is the simple fact that it is a funny movie. There are good characters. There is, as silly as it sounds, there is a good story. The cast is having fun. they have chemistry. And even the, you know, I mean, obviously the Ghostbusters are the main characters of this movie. You know, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, you know, I mean, one might forget that Sigourney Weaver was in this movie.
I know, right?
You know, but it's like, you got your main four characters, but then you sit there and you go, all right, well, yeah, but look at, I'm sure everybody would sit there and go, okay, I can remember specific things about this movie, and I can remember side characters and side characters' parts. You know, John Belushi, like, you can remember what he does in this movie. So it's not just, oh, well, the main, like the four main guys who are supposed to be the stars, like they're the Ghostbusters. So, you know, clearly, like, yeah, we're rooting for the Ghostbusters. There are supporting characters that you can clearly remember what they do in this movie. And there's genuine humor in this movie. They're like, I think the only thing that maybe doesn't hold up in this movie anymore is, you know, Venkman's a little bit of a creepy pervert.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't really hold up in this day and age anymore. Kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. Like, how did Sigourney Weaver's character kind of fall for him? But let's face it. I mean, that's just kind of how it was. Like, I'm not saying that's right, but you know,
I mean, here's the thing.
Things that happened. Like,
yeah, we can't go back in time.
Right. Exactly. So sorry, like get the hell over it. But like, you know, there is that like, damn, he is a little bit of a creeper.
Very much so. We see it with two different female characters in this movie. And it was one of the things that, you know, I would have never really paid that close of attention to, you know, if I would have watched this movie 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But in 2024, you watch this and it's hard not to notice it because it is so stark to the way that, like, that character wouldn't be portrayed as a hero. If the character was written that way today, that's not how he would be portrayed. And it's just something you can't help but notice. You can have any feeling you want to have about it, and fine, have any emotion around that you want to have. But it's hard. It does still stand out. And, you know, definitely creepy. I got to be honest, he did kind of skeeve me out a bit. And, I'm not sure what was harder to try to explain to my kids why Bill Murray's character behaves the way he does, what a card catalog is, or why everybody was smoking indoors. Those were the three things that I was like, yeah, this, my kids are not going to understand what any of those three things are.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly wouldn't want Venkman around your daughter. Like, that's just how it is. But, you know, very straightforward story. They end up being the Ghostbuster, you know, they end up being the Ghostbusters. And the thing that I like about this movie, and maybe this sounds ridiculous, is everything just kind of feels real, doesn't it?
100%.
You never sit there and go, all right, well, I'm suspending my disbelief. And I know, like, a lot of movies is like, you go to suspend your disbelief and just kind of get away from reality sometimes. That's what movies are there for. But, like, you can sit there and look at this movie and go, kind of feels like this is what would happen if ghosts were real. And this is how you took care of them. Like, there's a believability about this movie that makes you relate and root for these characters and care about what's going on. That's one of the things that really, on this rewatch, all these years later, because it's been a very long time since I watched the first Ghostbusters, because I found myself that I have watched Ghostbusters 2 more than I have watched Ghostbusters 1, and that'll be a conversation for a different episode. But that was one of the things on this rewatch that I really was like, there's a certain authenticity feeling to this movie.
I noticed it right away. And one of the things that really stood out to me on this occasion that I watched it was just how much I love the casualness that the two really scientific characters of Aegon and Rey have when they're talking about like their field of expertise and their understanding of the science of this. They just have like the utmost casualness around these pseudo-scientific terms that are all just made up terms, and the way they just throw them around with ease, and you just kind of nod your head and go, of course it is. Yeah. Like, I think modern sci-fi tends to rely on a couple of explanations when they need something magic to be done as science. You know, you hear words like quantum or nanotech used all the time when it's, listen, this is actually magic, but we want it to seem like science. And you don't ever get that feeling. Like the way they just throw these terms around, it comes across as terms that these characters have said 100 million times and don't mean anything. They're not special to these characters, because like you hear some of the stuff and you go, oh yeah, wow, yeah, and you're just into it. And I love that they just have all of this gear and they don't try to explain what any of it is, how any of it was made. There's no montage of them building any of this stuff. They just have it. There's no midichlorians to ruin the fun, that it's just mysterious and scientific and you just go with it because it's fun.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing, is again, we said this when we reviewed the Mummy series. Those first two movies, you can forgive things because there's genuine fun there, or you don't think about them like you would in other situations. You're like, no, you got to explain that to me. Like how did you make that? Like, I don't care. Like, it's, you know, the old, you know, somebody will be like, I don't need to know how you make the sausage. I just know that I want it. Like, yeah. I don't need to know how you made the proton pack. I just know that I want to see it bust a goddamn ghost. Like, that's.
Yeah. And I kind of want my own.
Yeah. Like, that's all there is to it. But again, you know, when I said earlier that, what I also liked about this movie is, you know, for me, everybody feels there's a lot of people that feel important, and it doesn't feel like there's certain characters in a lot of movies. It's like, okay, well, that person's there just to push the story forward or to narrate something because, well, there really is no explanation, or we think you're too dumb to just, you know, say, oh, okay, I get it. You need somebody with to exposition to push it forward. This movie never really feels like that. Like, anybody that they introduce feels like they should be part of the story. And that's, you know, the character Walter Peck, the Environmental Protection Agency. Like, it's played so well that it's like, okay, this guy doesn't feel forced, but like, he feels like a dick. He feels like he would be the person that's like, oh, you guys are fakes, or I need to inspect this and things like that. Like, again, the authenticity of, yeah, he feels like he would be sort of a foil, so to speak, to the Ghostbusters.
There's a couple of things that I think I kind of asked some questions like, oh, hold on, does this really, like, does this make sense? So like, one of them is the EPA guy, which for me, I did have a few questions around.
It's
so he's hassling them about all the obvious stuff they've been doing and clear evidence that they're containing ghosts there, supernatural entities. These guys are basically like acting like exterminators for, and he comes in and hassles them about it when I feel like, I don't know, maybe the FBI would be involved here. Like, I feel like there'd be other government agencies beyond the EPA that would want to know some things before he just commanded them to shut it down. Like, that did feel a little weird to me, but I think that's really only if you're trying to nitpick. And sometimes I can be guilty of that. The other time that it kind of, some things just seemed odd to me, really is one of the first scenes, and the university just tosses these guys out on their ass because they're doing this paranormal research. And they do it literally immediately after a paranormal event on campus. Like, that happened. And then the next thing that happens as soon as that's done is these guys are getting thrown out and their equipment is being confiscated. I went, wait, hold on. What are you doing? Like, didn't you just see, like, you guys don't know that this is going on and you're throwing out the only guys that might have a clue what's actually happening with this? Shouldn't you be giving them more money? Like, those were kind of the two things. If I wanted to possibly nitpick a little bit, those were kind of the two things that stood out to me.
Yeah, no, I certainly can see that. I mean, clearly Peck thinks these guys are, he's aware of Spider-Man and his rogue villains because he clearly thinks they're Mysterio. It's all an illusion. You know, the one thing that this movie does that I'm like, oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. I said something earlier. And then when the ending comes and we need to, you know, we're at the climax, who cares? Don't worry about it. Throw caution to the wind. And that's the don't cross the streams. You know, it's the, we can't do this. It could cause such a catastrophic event. And then it's like, I thought you said don't cross the streams. Man, shut the hell up. Like, basically it's just like that rebuttal. Like, man, shut up. Who cares? Like, you were listening to what I said earlier. Just can't ignore that shit. Like, what are you doing?
It did feel a little anticlimactic. Like, oh, you could have just done this all along. Like,
right.
It did feel a little anticlimactic to me.
And again, like, that's, you know, that is being critical of the film because still, like, it's, I love the ending, you know, we're going to go back and forth here, but you know, I still love the ending. It doesn't, like, that part of the movie does not ruin anything. So that is more of a just, you know, we're sitting here and we're watching these movies to review them and critique them and give our opinions. And it's like, you know, that is one of those typical movie things where you say something cannot happen because it could be so devastating. And then it's just like, who cares? Like, and that's something that happens in lots of movies.
Yeah. It did feel, like I said, a little anticlimactic, but it's just like, you know, it's one of those things when you're having fun with something, there's so many things you forgive. I'll tell you what also stood out to me is when you think about the Ghostbusters in your mind, you know, you've got Slimer, but then you've got like the four guys, like that's iconic, is those four, you know, they're among the most iconic four guys to do anything this side of the Beatles, really.
Or the car too. The car is, you know, this movie produced an iconic vehicle.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think when you think about the films that stand up over time, you know, the vehicles, the craft they use to get around, their tools and weapons, you know, the costumes that they wear, like all of these things, when you get it right, just really makes a movie stand the test of time. And this really nails it. But you kind of forget, for as iconic as the four of these guys are together, how late in the movie we're introduced to the character of Winston. He's like, it's like halfway to three quarters of the way into this movie when he gets added to their roster. And you kind of forget that until, especially if you haven't seen this in a while, like, you're like, oh God, yeah, where is he? Like, you know, right. And then the movie's almost over when he shows up.
Yeah, you might almost think that, like, you know, you would be remiss to not think like, oh yeah, they're together from the very beginning of the movie. Like, it's all four of them. And there's almost like a tongue-in-cheek, it's almost like he made the lineup himself almost, because in the movie he's like, man, I've been working with these guys for a short time, approximately 30 minutes on set. Like, you know, like there's a mention of in the movie, which I actually kind of like the fact that, you know, they acknowledge, like, he acknowledges that he hasn't been with them long, but like, dude, like, I think he even says, I can't remember the exact word, but he's like, dude, I've been with them a short, and I have seen some shit, man. Like, in the short time that I've been with these guys, like, we've busted ghosts, man. Like, good God. And there is a very interesting, and we will talk about this more definitely for Ghostbusters 2, but there's a very interesting fan theory that I one day just sunk myself into the rabbit hole with about Ghostbusters 2 that I'm going to love to talk about with, you know, and you kind of mentioned it with Peck. But there's a really, really interesting fan theory about the second one. as to why people would be skeptical of the Ghostbusters, considering everything that's happened, which I'm going to be super excited to talk about.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about, and certainly that could be a lot of fun to get into. It does feel kind of weird, and you know, I guess this is maybe more for Ghostbusters too, but it reminded me of when we were talking about the Transformers series, when like they try to pretend at the end of the first Transformers that this whole city did just see giant robots beating the shit out of each other and pretended like that didn't happen and those aren't real. Like, what? Are you kidding me? That's what you're trying to convince me you're trying to do? Like, that's crazy. Like, that's absolutely insane. Like, why would you try to convince me, the audience member, that your film is convincing people that they didn't see this giant thing that clearly everybody saw?
Yeah. You know, certainly. And it's funny because there was, you know, looking into this movie and certainly, you know, going, okay, like, what was the buzz back then? And you know, I did research, and it was funny to know that when they did a test screening for like 200 people, it was really well received. But then they screened it for like industry executives, and it was like, oof, like one person, like I actually like I found this like looking this up and seeing how this was originally thought of. One executive was like literally, oh, what'd you think of the movie? And they, Aykroyd's agent talks about this. His name was Michael Ovitz. Said the executive literally said, don't worry, we all make mistakes. Like, wow. that was his reaction to the movie. Like, oh, what'd you think? Like, we all make mistakes. And then, you know, it was, lo and behold, it turned out to be the number one movie in America for 7 straight weeks when it released in 1984. You know, again, sat there and makes 4 iconic characters. You know, people still to this day will, know Bill Murray as Peter Venkman in a Ghostbuster, and the car is iconic. The logo, for God's sakes, if you sat there and there were 10 logos up on the screen, people would know the Ghostbusters. You know, it's one of those logos that people would know. They wouldn't sit there and go, I don't know. Like, it's recognizable. If it's not like you're going to have Batman, Superman, Ghostbusters, like, and then people are going to miss the Ghostbusters logo and then move on. And like, no, people like, that, like, it's an iconic logo. People know what it is.
It's funny you mentioned that, because it was something I was thinking about as we were preparing for this, and I wish I would have looked up the article. There, several years ago, there was a Ghostbusters game that came out that really functioned as kind of the third film, you know, yes, chronologically in this series. And I can remember the cover of Game Informer when they were previewing this, and it had that logo on the front. And part of the article actually talked about the logo and how recognizable and iconic this is worldwide. And when they do like different tests, you know, just test to see how something might resonate with people worldwide, the Ghostbusters logo was just as recognizable or more than almost anything they showed people globally, with the exception of like the Coca-Cola logo and like maybe the Disney one. I'm trying to remember what, like, it was like among the 3 to 5 most recognizable global iconic symbols that people everywhere could pull out and recognize. And I was just like, wow, I that really made me, I remember reading that magazine article thinking, wow, really? And then, you know, you stop to think and go, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny too, just because, and Rob, you know that I've always been like, I'm always interested in these things. Like, you know, 7 weeks at number 1 at the box office. 8th week, it moved to number 2. The 9th week, it went back to number 1. Stayed in the theater for over 30 weeks and stayed in the top 3 during the first 20 weeks of its run. Just incredible staying power. And you think about, okay, this is 1987, okay? This is the 1980s, and money-wise, did you ever know how much Murray made because of this movie?
Oh, geez. The residuals alone have got to be pretty good.
Well, so just in 1987, because again, I did a lot of I was actually going back and watching this movie, I was fascinated to see when this first came out, reception, things like that, because I was like, damn, this is really good. And it made me this is something that has stood up over all these years. But think about this number in the 80s. Murray made $28 million because of gross profits, because of a net percentage of gross profits of this movie. He made $28 million from this movie. Now, I'm sure there's residuals all the way through up until now. But back then in the 80s, originally, he made $28 million off of this.
Wow.
That is insane.
I mean, in today's money, with the way inflation is lately, that's what, $1.2 billion?
Right. And it made me sit there, and again, going back, but man, you talk about eras for movies and years for movies. Gremlins, The Karate Kid, The Terminator, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Romancing the Stone, and The Never-Ending Story. All movies that came out. What a year.
Wow.
What a year.
Wow. That's I think you just described a good bit of my childhood.
And Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh my goodness. Wow. 84 was a banger of a year.
Right? Wow.
Whew.
That's just, it's crazy. It's crazy to me. But again, there's not many franchises, and we've talked about this, but there are not many franchises that have stood this long and been able to have had, a sequel come out. And there's even less movies that have had a sequel come out after all of that time, especially after, what was not saying this is my opinion. We'll save mine and your opinion for when we do the review, but Ghostbusters Afterlife came out, and yes, they certainly said we're going with this direction, but you've seen where it's like, okay, you can still go back to the original story, but you've had a bad entry in the series and it just kills your franchise. People are not interested. And certainly, the all-female led Ghostbusters was not well received. It was not well reviewed. It did not make good money. Again, those are just facts. I'm not saying what my opinion of the movie is, but to be able to come back and have Ghostbusters Afterlife make money, be successful enough to get a sequel in this day and age, because let's face it, it's not guaranteed. And even some things that you're like, how the hell did that not get a sequel? It says something about this property that in 23 days, we're getting a new Ghostbusters movie.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Just even you think about the goodwill that people have for this franchise overall. We mentioned the costumes, the characters, the car. Have we talked about the theme song?
Right. Yes. The theme song. Again, another.
You're guaranteed to hear it 10 times a day during Halloween. You're guaranteed. There's not there's a million Christmas songs, but there's four Halloween songs. One is Michael Jackson's Thriller. The other is Ghostbusters, and there's, you know, the Monster Mash and maybe something by from Elvira. Like, that's it. That's your list. That's what you have to choose from.
Or but the Halloween theme from John Carpenter.
Yeah. Yeah. You like, got that too.
You know,
and that's really the list. And every Halloween you're going to hear at a party or a get together or something that you're going to take your kids to, you're going to hear the Ghostbusters theme. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to sing along. Why? Right. Because it's awesome.
You're going to, I literally, that's so funny. I was just going to say that. And I was going to say, and guess what you're going to see and guess what you're going to hear when that song comes on, you're going to see people bopping around. Like, you can't help but be in a good mood and move your body when that song comes on.
When you're at a Halloween function and Ray Parker Jr. says, who are you going to call? It's involuntary. You're just going to say, Ghostbusters. Like, you can't help yourself.
Even if somebody says that not on Halloween, you just casually say that. And you're, you know, it's like, oh, well, who are you going to call? Like, even if somebody's just being serious, like, well, who are you going to call? There's somebody in that area that might not even be in that group.
Part of that conversation.
Right. They're going to just instinctively yell out the Ghostbusters. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's the same effect of when you have a group of elder millennials around and you just say out, you just yell out, regulators, there's going to be like 15 people that go, mount up. It's like involuntary. Right. You can't control yourself. Yeah. It's just what you do.
Yeah, it is something. And, you know, the one last point, too, is, you know, I said, like, how many franchises have stood around this long, you know, 1984 and to still have content coming out that fans like is very rare, but it's also even rarer to see, okay, you know, 1984, geez, that's a lifetime ago. These actors can't do it. And, you know, Ghostbusters Afterlife, again, I won't tip all of my hand, but the one thing that I think they did very successfully is they managed to make it so you could go, okay, I still love the cast of Ghostbusters, but I can still like and enjoy this passing of the torch, and I want to see what happens with this new group. That doesn't happen off. That doesn't always happen. People will get attached to, you know, to these roles and to these characters and to these actors and say, well, nobody else can do it. You know, say what you will, and some people will say it's timing. I've certainly said it was a release window thing, but, you know, did anybody want to see a different person playing Han Solo? Not really. No. Nobody really wanted to see that. And I don't even think his performance is bad. I'm not saying his performance isn't bad. I'm not saying he doesn't freaking look like what could have been a young Harrison Ford's Han Solo character. I'm not saying that at all. But there's just something there. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, will we see that with, you know, look at Robert Downey Jr. now with Iron Man. You know, how long is it going to be before they said, okay, well, you know, Iron Man is back in a different role, and they're like, well, he's being played by, I don't know, just name somebody. Are people going to be receptive to that? You know, certainly look at the original six in the MCU. And certainly we've talked about that, but there's more to it. But there have, like, Chris Evans, Robert Downey Jr., you know, even to a degree because he was in it with the Avengers, Mark Ruffalo, like Chris Hemsworth, like, now that the focus has shifted from those six people, there's a lot of people that haven't let that go. And it's like, well, the good old days are kind of behind us with Marvel. We might see that with Hugh Jackman in Wolverine, where we're going to see him again in Deadpool 3. And then, you know, are they going to sit there and go, okay, well, now we're going to introduce the X-Men. And, you know, I'm just going to say it because he was linked to it before. Here's Tom Hardy playing Wolverine. You know, how's that going to go? Are people going to go, I don't want to see another, like, no, like, and certainly you would have to. You can't have X-Men without Wolverine. I just, at least not forever. But it's a rare thing to have, I think, a successful transition where you can care about new characters and still appreciate the, you know, what came before. And I think that's something Afterlife did really well.
Yeah, it, you think about how much we adore these characters that we meet in the original film and why we like them so much. You know, I guess maybe like Jurassic World kind of gave us that a little bit. Like there was enough there that we liked some of those characters. We didn't love them. Mm-hmm. Not the way we do kind of our original ones that made us fall in love with the franchise to begin with. You know, I think the closest you can really get is, you know, some people were really into the prequels of Star Wars. You know, they really liked Anakin and Obi-Wan, particularly Ewan McGregor's portrayal of Obi-Wan. I think he's really who people think of first when it comes to Obi-Wan, as opposed to Eric Guinness. You know, I think he's kind of taken it, you know, and then the sequel trilogy, you know, you have new characters and there's the old characters are still there and maybe not used effectively. And, you know, I think there was a lot of other things people had as problems with that, as opposed to just the actual torch passing. But your point around the torch passing in major intellectual property is valid, because I'm trying to think of how many times it's ever really been done effectively where you feel like, okay, yep, this is great. We're going to take what we loved and we're just going to hand it over to the next generation and it's going to be perfect. I mean, think how often we get like spin-off TV shows and how many of them are successful. Like there's really not that many. There's a ton of them that are spun off, but not that many are Frasier getting spun off from Cheers and lasting longer than the original. That it's right. It's rare.
Yeah, it's certainly rare. And again, it's so rare in this day and age, to be out for as long as it has been. And hold up as well. Because again, I mean, there's movies from the 2000s that you go back and go, whoa. Like, you know, you mentioned Star Wars. Look at the fact of, you know, let's go look at Attack of the Clones. And
do we have to?
There's so many problems with that. And maybe you didn't notice it immediately when that first movie came out, but you go back and look at that movie now, and it's not just because of the dialogue, it's almost unbearable to watch because of the CGI. Like it's painful to look at.
And I mentioned the special effects of this film being like good. And I think this is where, you know, certainly computer generated effects were not really a thing. I think a lot of this was probably hand animated. You know, there's a lot of techniques that they did, but they did so much of it practically. And what movies used to do that movies of today don't do, because that you can just do everything by computer now, is if it wasn't something that could be done practically, they just didn't do it. And that heightens the realism when you know you're looking at a real object. So I was kind of making a joke about the card catalog earlier. At the opening of this movie, when you have the ghost that's haunting the library and all of those little cards are just shooting into the air. Well, if you make that movie in the 21st century, that's all done digitally and it looks like hell. Mm-hmm. But in 1984, they did it practically and it looks great. Like you really feel like there's a possessed character in there. And it works. And yes, I know that the apartment building at the end with all the, you know, the gargoyles and stuff like that, I know it's all foam. Like I can tell that it's foam, but I don't care, because at least it's a real thing.
Right. Yeah. I just this movie is so, it holds up so well. And just one last thing that I will say is we talked about, you know, an iconic car, iconic. Even the suits are iconic. There are so many quotable lines in this movie too. There's so many things that you can remember tons of characters saying.
And I think that's what adds to the kind of thing that makes a movie iconic, or the kinds of things that work their way into your conversations naturally.
Yeah. It, like you said, like there is no Rob, only Zool. Like there's that. There's just, oh, there's so many things that you could just, like you said, weave into a conversation.
Yeah. And you, good luck trying to find somebody that is like, oh, Ghostbusters. Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm not interested in that. Good luck finding that person.
Yeah, I don't think you... I think that's true. I don't know anybody that I've ever talked to that is like, yeah, that movie sucks. Ever.
Yeah, there's nobody's like, yeah, not for me.
So, yeah, I think... you know, it's just, again, though, it's the perfect storm of the right script, but again, the right casting for these characters,
who are clearly having the time of their lives.
Yeah. And we've talked about that so many times that you can sometimes, again, at least in my opinion, see through the screen that they are having a good time, that they enjoyed filming. Because other times you can sit there and it's like, Jesus Christ, do these two people like each other? Or they have no chemistry? Or man, like what's going on? And then you read these reports and it was like, yeah, these two co-stars like could not stand each other. And it's like, well, shit, that came across clear as day. Yeah. And then you have something like this where it's like, well, damn, these people seem like they had a ton of fun and just great casting, just absolutely great casting. And just an all around fun movie that who would have thought it would have spun what it did. And again, what is that? 84. So
yeah, 40 years.
Yeah. You know, 40 years later, we'd be talking about this because there's a new movie coming. Doesn't happen often.
And you mentioned Gremlins earlier, but I mean, like, you know, there's, and Karate Kid, I guess, as well, is another one that also had its own spinoff and revival, but nothing with the universal goodwill that is generated by Ghostbusters.
No. I mean, think about the fact of, you know, it released on Max in season one, and I watched it and I actually thought it was cute and it was entertaining. You know, The Legend of Mogwai, you know, you think about Gremlins, which is, you know, the first one is, I thought the first one was, you know, people liked it. Certainly over time, Gremlins 2 got, you know, a massive overhaul of, I think, respect. And like, okay, well, it's fun. Like, holy cow. Like it's such a tonal shift from the first one, but you know, that was one of those movies where I feel like over time, people just kind of came around to it and were like, you know, hell, that's a hell of a lot of fun. But like, you think about that and it's like Ghost, like Gremlins hasn't gotten anything, you know, Gizmo, certainly, you know, people know Gizmo, but They've never done a Gremlins 3. It's such a rare feat that like a property like this is able to have the staying power.
And I think too, this, the people who have the rights to the property still being interested in continuing on with it. You know, I think sometimes that's where some of these things get held up, is this right. Estate, well, or that estate, or, you know, not interested or whatever the case is.
Yeah. And I mean, certainly again, there's, you could tell, especially with the new one, like, cause it's the son, there's a lot of love there. There's a respect for his father's property and what, you know, what he made. And I think that helps, is the simple fact that, you know, you had somebody who wanted to keep the franchise going out of respect and not so much out of, and again, I'm sure it doesn't hurt, but you know, it seemed like a genuine, I want to do this out of respect to my late father. And it wasn't just like, well, shit, I'm going to make a buck off of this.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm excited. I haven't, I've seen the, I've seen Afterlife once, and I remember really enjoying it. So I'm looking forward to rewatching that again. I haven't seen the second Ghostbusters movie in, I couldn't even tell you the last time I saw it. And I've never actually seen the all-female one. So I'm aware of its place in like the conversation, that it's not regarded well. And it's kind of like controversial that it's not regarded well. So I'm aware of all that. But I fully intend to go into my first viewing of it with a very open mind. It's going to be whatever it's going to be. If I like it, I will say that I like it. If I don't like it, I will say why I don't like it. And I'm actually looking forward to just even just seeing what it is. There's been plenty of times that we've talked about bad movies that I've never seen before that I'm like, you know, I've always heard that was bad. I kind of want to actually see like how bad it is.
Right. Cause there's several different reasons there. You know, is it bad script? Is it bad CGI? Is it and just because it's bad doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. But I will be interested for your absolute first viewing of that. Again, I've said, and we'll talk about this more when we review it, I have seen Ghostbusters 2 more than I have seen Ghostbusters 1. So I'll be really, you know, interested to see what you think of Ghostbusters 2 and, you know, do you remember kind of what your original feelings were? Because I think that's a movie where it was, you know, people are like, oh, okay, little different from the first one.
Yeah.
And, you know, over time, I think, you know, similar to some other things, maybe Ghostbusters 2 got a little bit more love, but I'll be interested to see what your opinion is on that, since it's been, you know, from what it sounds like, a pretty decent chunk of time before that movie's, you know, been in front of you.
Yeah. There's not much I recall about it, to be honest. Little bits, and I'm sure more will come back as I go, but yeah, we're planning on watching it this weekend and, looking forward to bringing that to the listeners as well.
Yeah, very cool. So thank you, everybody, for jumping in, listening to this episode. Super excited to, you know, get into this Ghostbusters franchise. I know, I mean, this month is kind of busy. You know, we've got Ghostbusters that we're doing. Certainly, I need to get out and see Dune Part 2, because Dune, when it first came out, was my movie of the year. I thought Dune was astonishing. Got Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire, coming out at the end of the month. For My Stupidity, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2. which I was a huge fan of. But before we ever, you know, I ever go out and see any of those, or I review any of those, you know, whether you know, Rob, you're a part of, maybe we can do Godzilla's, you know, we can talk about those. We do need to give a rating for Ghostbusters, and we're going to hit popcorn time here before we sign off. And for me, Ghostbusters is a 5 bucket. It's fun. It's entertaining. It holds up incredibly well. Tight script, good visuals, just an all-around good time. It's a movie that when I watch, and Rob, we've said this before, it gets my undivided attention. It's not a movie that I can actually, you know, get up from. It's not a, okay, well, it's on and I'm going to do A, B, and C. Like, it's a movie that I want to give my attention to, and that is one of the main reasons that this would get a 5 is, even after all this times and no matter how many times I would see it, it's a movie that I feel deserves my attention when it's on.
Yeah. I probably would have in my head planned on giving this a 5 coming in. There's just those few things that I said, you know, if you want to pick at this or pick at that, it's there. So it's a 4.75 for me. And I feel strange going that low, cause I do enjoy this movie so much. But I kind of wish there's a couple of those plot things they could have pulled together. And as I mentioned, there's parts of Peter Venkman that you just don't feel great about watching today. And it doesn't take away from my enjoyment of the movie, but you just kind of go, kind of wish they would have done something a little different with that. But again, you can't change the past. It is what it is. I thoroughly enjoyed watching this, and I'm looking forward to finishing the rest of the series. So 4 3/4.
Yeah, absolutely. So certainly a nice little turnaround from what we've been doing with Halo. But so
a nice palate cleanser.
Yes, exactly. And we'll see if by the time we do Ghostbusters 2, if that's going to be a palate cleanser, because another episode of Halo will be coming around the corner. So
yep.
Are we unfortunately maybe going to have two bad meals here back to back? We'll see. And certainly depending, I mean,
could be three or four.
We'll see. So we'll see what happens. But again, listeners, thank you so much for checking out this episode. As always, make sure you go into the show notes, check out our links where you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, our email address, which is very simple. It's just the initials of the show, mgttmpodcast@gmail.com. We actually have some more giveaways coming up that I have been able to get together, including even one for Bob Marley, One Love, that I'm going to be able to give away very soon, which I know that movie was really killing at the box office, getting great reviews. Excited about some of the giveaways that we're going to have, and always just the interaction with listeners and what you thought of episodes, or maybe what you'd like us to review coming up. So, Rob, as always, man, thank you so much for joining, and listeners, thank you so much. We will be back very soon with another review.